And it sounded slick?
No, but the police are just starting to look.
What about us?
We're going to look for Johnny Chuchi.
I think his brother was telling us a fib, and Johnny's with him. Johnny was driving his car, and I talked to the ex-wife. I bet he's creeping around her house, looking in her windows. We should go there at night. That's when obsessed lunatics go creeping. Only thing is, I don't know if I want to go out at night, what with the zombies roaming everywhere. Have you noticed they're all over Trenton? I'd think they'd stay close to their cemetery. I mean, how did they get to the hardware store? Do they drive? Do they have zombie cars? Do they cart their decapitated heads around in cabs or Uber cars?
I hadn't thought about it. It was a good question. Ranger called on my cell phone.
Babe, your car is at the police station, but your messenger bag is at the cemetery on Morley Street.
I kind of punted a zombie off the right front quarter panel yesterday. The police are looking at the car for DNA and stuff. There was silence on Ranger's end, and I thought I caught a single burst of muffled laughter. Are you laughing? I asked him.
Yes. What happened to the zombie?
He disappeared.
Hard to take down a zombie,
Ranger said.
Was the car totaled?
No, I'm still working on that.
Counting down the days, Ranger said.
I drove past Little Pinky's gym on my way to the burg.
I don't see a silver Honda in the lot,
Lula said.
Are we going to stop in again?
No, Johnny isn't going to be at the gym, and Little Pinky isn't going to help me find him. I'm going to take another look at Little Pinky's house, and then I'm going to talk to the ex-wife.
I like that plan. I'm interested in the ex-wife. What would possess a woman to take up painting gnomes? It's sick, but in a good way, you see what I'm saying? I think she must be a unique individual.
It was almost 11 o'clock by the time I cruised past Little Pinky's house. A driveway led to a detached single-car garage that sat at the back of the property. There were no cars in front of the house and no cars in the driveway. I circled the block and parked one house down from Little Pinky on the same side of the road. Lula and I went to the door and rang the bell. No one answered, but the dog repeated his barking, snarling routine. Lula walked around and looked in the first-floor windows. I walked back to the garage and looked in the single, grimy side-door window. We met back at the front of the house.
Well?
Lula asked. The garage is empty. No car.
And I didn't see any people. I guess someone could be upstairs, but there was nothing that said a freeloading guest was hanging out.
I cut across the burg to the ex-wife's, and we picked our way through the gnomes to the front door.
The advantage to this is you don't have to cut the grass, being that there isn't any, Lula said. This lady got wall-to-wall gnomes.
I rang the bell, and Judy Chuchi opened the door. She was a couple inches shorter than me, and pleasantly plump. That's an outdated expression, but it fit Judy Chuchi perfectly. She had brown hair tucked back behind her ears, and she was wearing jeans and a gray sweatshirt. The sweatshirt looked like someone had dripped red paint on it, or maybe had a massive nosebleed.
Oh, my God, she said. Stephanie Plum, right? You used to hang out with my little sister, Joni, Joni Beam.
Wow, I said. I didn't know you were Joni's sister.
Yeah, I get that a lot. We don't look alike, right? She's all blonde and thin, and I'm, you know, round.
What's she doing now? I haven't seen her in years.
She works at the tattoo parlor on State Street downtown. She's real good. I saw her tattoo Madonna on a guy once.
It's got to be hard to do Madonna, Lula said. I guess being artistic runs in the family. Looks like your thing is gnomes.
A lot of people don't understand the finer points of gnome painting, Judy said. At first glance, they might all look the same, but it's the details that count. Charlie over in the corner has a little pink in his red coat, and Harry by the mailbox has a crooked smile, and poor Mr. Murphy has a cataract. It was an accident. I added too much white to his eyes, and next thing he was blind.
Judy bit into her lower lip.
I'm so sorry, she whispered to Mr. Murphy.
Can't you just paint over it? Lula asked.
Judy shook her head.
No, he's blind. It's irreversible.
That's too bad, Lula said. Seems like something could be done to help him.
I'm told there's a paint specialist in Denver who does wonderful work, Judy said. I've started a GoFundMe page for Mr. Murphy.
That's an excellent idea, Lula said. I hear those pages rake in big bucks, and they got a good variety of weed in Denver, too.
Judy nodded.
Mr. Murphy would like that, and he deserves it. He suffered so much.
About Johnny, I said. Judy stiffened and looked around.
He better not be here. I have a restraining order.
He missed his court date, I said. I work for his bond agent, and I need to bring him in to get rescheduled. I was hoping you'd help me find him.
In other words, you want to take him to jail?
Yes.
I'm in. What do you want to know? What do I have to do?
Boy, you must really dislike him, Lula said.
He's a douchebag, Judy said. But I don't want to get into that in front of the gnomes.
Judy stepped back.
Would you like to come in? I have coffee cake.
We followed Judy along a narrow path through the living room. There were gnomes on every surface. They were on the floor, on the tables, on the couch, and on all the chairs. Ditto the dining room and kitchen. She had a gnome painting workstation set up on the kitchen table.
You ever watch that television show about hoarders? Lula asked Judy.
Yeah, those poor people get buried alive with their stuff. I don't know why they don't get help.
You ever see any hoarder shows about gnomes?
Judy was searching through her kitchen.
I know I have a coffee cake here somewhere.
That's okay, I said. We don't really have time for coffee cake. I was hoping you could give me some information on Johnny. Do you know where he's staying?
From what I hear, he moves around. Nobody can tolerate him for more than 2 days. He's so annoying. He has an opinion about everything. Talk, 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 and he's constantly cracking his knuckles. And there's no polite way to say this. He farts. A lot.
Maybe he's got gluten issues, Lula said.
Maybe he should double up on his underwear in the place that counts instead of wearing a pair on his head, Judy said.
Does he have a favorite bar or fast food place? I asked. Is there any place he regularly hangs out?
Yes, Judy said. Here. I have a restraining order against him because he skulks around my house every night and breaks my gnomes, but that doesn't stop him. He leaves stupid presents on my doorstep.
What kind of presents?
Lula asked.
Flowers and bottles of wine and pizza and jewelry.
They sound like nice presents, Lula said.
I guess so, but he's such an oaf. He's always knocking over the gnomes. He broke Henry's arm last night. I call the police, and by the time they get here, he's gone.
Where does he get the money to buy these presents, I asked. Does he have a job?
He steals them, Judy said. The moron puts his underpants on his head and steals stuff.
Does he have a routine? I asked. When does he leave these presents?
Usually between 9 and 11. He knows I go to bed at 11.
I'm going to stake out your house between 9 and 11 for a couple days, I said. Don't call the police. Maybe I can catch Johnny. Lula and I tiptoed our way through the gnomes to Morelli's car.
If you ask me, they're both wackadoodle,
Lula said, buckling her seatbelt. I was about to drive to the office when my mother called.
You have to come see this, she said. You have to talk to your grandmother, and I've got kielbasa for lunch.
We're having lunch at my parents' house, I said to Lula. Grandma met us at the door. Her hair was cut, styled, and colored to look exactly like my mom's, and Grandma was spray-tanned, head to toe, with the exception of white circles around her eyes.
What do you think? She asked. I think you rock, Lula said. Us girls gotta mix it up once in a while. I'm taking it for a test drive, Grandma said.
My mom was in the kitchen.
I heard that, she said. As long as you don't test drive it to Florida.
I led the way and hung my bag on a kitchen chair. The small table was set for four, and the bread and butter were already out.
Hey, Mrs. P, Lula said. It smells good in here.
Kielbasa and sauerkraut, my mom said. It's lunch, so everyone helps themselves from the pot on the stove.
We all filled our plates and sat at the table.
Look at her, my mother said, cutting her eyes to Grandma. She's going to Florida. I'm going to come back from Mass someday, and she'll be gone. And who knows about this man? He could be a serial killer, a white slaver. He could be one of those men who steals Social Security from old women.
He has a good job working in a bar, Grandma said. He's a family man. He can't help if he looks hot. And my Social Security isn't worth crap. I wouldn't be living here if I got any kind of money from Social Security.
I want you to do a background check on him, my mom said to me. I know you have all those programs that you use to track down criminals. I want you to find out about this person.
That's reasonable, Lula said. I always check up on the men I go out with. There's some freaks out there.
I guess that's okay, Grandma said. I'm sure he has nothing to hide. I took down all the information on Roger Murth and promised I'd get right to it. Truth is, I agreed with my mom and Lula. It was a good idea. Hard to have a lot of trust in a guy who looks like George Hamilton. Lula and I laid waste to the kielbasa, insincerely offered to help with cleanup, and left.
I'm somewhat of an expert on sausage, Lula said when we were in the car, and that was about the best sausage ever. I wouldn't mind knowing how to cook a sausage like that, but I'd probably need a stove.
Lula had half a fridge, a Keurig, and a single induction burner. At least she had an excuse for not cooking. I had zip. I drove past all the real estate associated with Johnny Chuchi and didn't see the silver Honda. I called Morelli and asked about Slick. He said they'd searched the entire cemetery and its surroundings and didn't find Slick or any of his body parts. I'm at a temporary dead end, I said to Lula. I'm going to drop you at the office and head home to research Grandma's boyfriend. Do you want to stake out the gnome house with me tonight?
Wouldn't miss it. With any luck, Chuchi will show up and he'll still have his underpants on his head.
Chapter 17. I let myself into my apartment and paused. No television sounds. No men's shoes kicked off in the living room. No one singing in the shower. Hello? I called. Silence. I hung my bag on a hook in the foyer and walked through the apartment. No diesel. Good deal. I was happy to delay the confrontation. I sat at the dining room table, opened my laptop, and ran Roger Murph through a couple search programs. Nothing derogatory turned up. He had good credit. His work history checked out. He had two adult children living in New Jersey. And he had a wife in Key West. Whoops. I ran the wife, Miriam Murph, through the search programs, and she showed the same residence and credit history as Roger. Files indicated that they'd been married for 40 years and that she was still alive. I couldn't find any photos, so I called Connie. She has more advanced search programs than I do, and she has Florida connections. I fed her my information, and she said she'd get back to me. I suppose I didn't really need a photo, but I wanted to see if he actually looked like George Hamilton. Morelli called at 4 o'clock. What's new? I asked.
Are you sure you want to know?
Is it bad?
I got the autopsy report back on the homeless victim.
The one with the hole in his head?
Yeah. He had blunt force trauma to the back of his head. It appears that he was knocked unconscious and then had his brain removed. This is the first victim who seems to have been killed by the brain snatcher. All others were already deceased.
I don't get it. How did the zombies remove the brain?
Big straw.
That's not funny.
I was being serious.
Ugh. What about Slick? I asked.
No sign of him. I'm on my way to talk to his parents.
Would you like me to pick something up for dinner and bring it to your house?
That would be great. Bring something that can be reheated in case I'm late.
How late? There was a beat of silence.
Does it matter?
Morelli asked. I'm staking out Judy Chuchi's house tonight from 9 to 11.
I'm pretty sure I'll be home by 11.
If you come home later than that, I'll be the woman in your bed.
I like it.
I disconnected, went to the foyer, and pulled Slick's notebook out of my messenger bag. I returned to the table and started reading. I drifted into a coma on page 5. Oprah might love it. Me, not so much. It was about a person named Zero who was a lost soul. Zero had given up his humanoid and sexual identity and was wandering naked in the woods. The idea was interesting, but the writing was atrocious. Zero explained on page 1 that he was inventing a new writing form called stream of unconsciousness and that he didn't believe in the use of punctuation. I skimmed from page 5 on. Not a lot happened to Zero. Mostly Zero was thinking about food and having sex with itself. These were complicated issues for Zero because, having no identity, he didn't know what he was supposed to eat. The sex came easier and was explained in great detail, but was difficult to follow without punctuation. On page 22, Zero came across another thing. It didn't have a name, but it was also having sex with itself. Fortunately, the writing ended on page 23 shortly after ejaculation. Hard to tell which of them was ejaculating. Maybe both. I got baked beans and pulled pork from the deli and fresh-made rolls from the bakery. Morelli wasn't home when I arrived at his house, so I stowed the beans and the pork in the fridge, and I put the rolls in the cupboard where Bob couldn't get at them. Bob and I went for a walk around a bunch of blocks, and when we returned to the house, it was still empty. I fed Bob and made myself a pulled pork sandwich. I called Morelli, but he didn't pick up. It was 8:30 when I fetched Lula.
"Did you notice how I'm all dressed in black for night surveillance?"
Lula said, buckling herself in.
"Between my black clothes and my chocolate skin, I'm a total shadow. I'm like invisible. I'm the black bomb."
I was dressed in the same clothes I'd worn all day, and my skin did me no favors when it came to the shadow blending thing. Fortunately, I was average enough that I almost never attracted attention. I parked Morelli's car on the opposite side of the street from Judy Chuchi's house, and Lula and I settled in to wait. Lights were on in her house, but curtains were drawn. It was an overcast night, no moon. By 9 o'clock, I realized I was going to have to leave the car and get closer to the house. It would be too easy for Johnny to sneak around in the dark, drop a package on Judy's porch, and run off into the night. Lula and I crossed the street and hid behind a car belonging to the neighbor next door. There was no street traffic. Residents were inside watching television, putting kids to bed, and Facebooking.
"I can't wait to see what present Judy's getting tonight," Lula said. "It's like she got Christmas every day."
I checked my watch at 9:30. "Not a creature is stirring, not even a mouse," I said to Lula.
"Tell me about it," Lula said. "This is tedious. I'm tired of standing here. I can't even do anything on my phone on account of the screen would light up."
"I think I just saw movement on the far side of Judy's house," I whispered. We froze and squinted into the darkness.
"I see it," Lula said. "It's him. I can see his raggedy undies on his head."
I didn't see any undies. I saw a shadowy figure move in front of a tree and disappear. I thought I heard the rustle of cloth, or maybe it was something brushing against the tree.
"Wait until he goes to the door," I whispered. "We don't want to have to chase him through everyone's backyard in the dark."
"Sure, I get that," Lula said. "But what if he doesn't go to her front door? What if he's going to her back door? I'm going to sneak between these two houses and see if he's at the back door."
No, too late. She was off and tippy-toe running to the back of the house. And then she was out of sight around the corner of the building.
"Stop," she shouted. "You're under arrest, sort of. Actually, we can't arrest you, but we can apprehend you."
I took off at a dead run. It was pitch black between the houses, and there wasn't much light at the back. I heard something crash. I heard Lula cussing. More crashing.
"Damn fucking gnomes," Lula said.
I turned into the backyard and ran into a gnome.
"I got him," Lula yelled. "I got Mr. Underpants. I got... Yow!"
She was on the other side of the yard by the back door, and there were about 100 gnomes between us.
"Help!" Lula yelled. "Holy crap!"
I kicked a bunch of gnomes out of the way and crossed the yard. I saw Lula, but no Johnny. "Did he get away?" I asked. Lula was dancing around.
"It was a zombie. I touched the zombie. I got zombie cooties. It was awful. He smelled like duty incarnations. I can't get it out of my nose. I gotta cut off my nose. Get me a knife."
"Are you sure it was a zombie?"
"I got cooties. I got cooties. They're on my clothes. He grabbed me and he touched my clothes."
Lula ripped her black spandex tank top off and peeled her black spandex tights off. She was left wearing a black thong.
"Good God," I said. "If you take any more off, you're not getting in Morelli's car."
"It's a cooties. I can feel them on me. They're zombie cooties. They're the worst kind."
"Are you sure they aren't Johnny Chuchi cooties?"
"He had bad breath, too. His breath smelled like dirt and worms."
"He breathed on you?"
"It was awful."
The back porch light flashed on, and Judy stepped out.
"What's happening? Did you catch Johnny?"
"You got any bleach?" Lula asked. "I gotta pour bleach on myself."
Judy looked at the backyard.
"My gnomes! What happened to my gnomes? Where's Mr. Sunshine Sparkle?"
"We just got here," I said. "It looks like someone tried to run through your yard."
"Yeah," Lula said. "It might have been a pack of wild dogs, or maybe the zombies."
Judy blinked.
"Zombies?"
"They're all over town," Lula said. "Trenton's lousy with them. They were probably here looking for gnome brains."
"That's horrible," Judy said.
"No shit," Lula said. "You might want to take your gnomes in the house. What's left of them, anyways."
You haven't got any clothes on,
Judy said to Lula.
My clothes got the cooties, Lula said.
Judy grimaced, stepped into her house, and closed and locked the door.
I should have shot him in the head, Lula said. It's that he caught me by surprise.
Next time, I told her.
Yeah, I'll be ready next time.
I looked at her clothes lying on the ground. What are you going to do about your clothes?
I'm not touching them. They can rot there. They've been tarnished with zombie juju.
You're only wearing a thong.
And?
I'm feeling uncomfortable.
Maybe because you never been a hoe. You get used to this when you're a hoe. You get comfortable with naked shit.
So you're going home like that?
Is it a problem?
I blew out a sigh. No, but if we get stopped by the police, you have to hold me at gunpoint and say you forced me to drive you like this.
Sure, I could do that.
I drove Lula across town without incident and dropped her at her house. I waited until she was safe inside, and then I drove to my apartment. I idled in the lot and looked up at my windows. No lights were on. No flicker from a television screen. Probably no diesel. I parked, walked into the building, and took the stairs to my apartment. We have an elevator, but it's unreliable and frequently smells like takeout burrito. I flipped the kitchen light on and said hello to Rex. I gave him fresh water, filled his cup with hamster food, and gave him a Ritz cracker. I shoved some clean clothes into a tote bag and debated giving Morelli the notebook I'd lifted from the cemetery. In the end, I decided against it. There was nothing to be gained from the journal, and it would only complicate things. Diesel's leather knapsack was still stashed in a corner, so I assumed he'd be back. It didn't look to me like the bed had been slept in since I departed it, and there were no dirty dishes in the kitchen. I had a squishy feeling in my stomach that something bad might have happened to Diesel. I hoped this wasn't the case. I hoped he wasn't a zombie, and I hoped he wasn't married. I ignored the squishy stomach, said goodnight to Rex, and left my apartment. I parked in front of Morelli's house, and he pulled in behind me in Ranger's Lexus NX. He wrapped an arm around me, hugged me close, and kissed me.
I'm beat,
he said.
And I'm starving, but I think if I could get something to eat, I could muster enough energy to get you naked.
I brought pulled pork.
That'll do it,
Morelli said. We sat at the little kitchen table, and Morelli dug in. I'm guessing you still haven't found Slick, I said.
No. No head, no brain, no body. I talked to his parents, but they weren't helpful. I'm waiting for the tech to isolate the zombie frames for me.
Did anything interesting turn up at the cemetery?
We exhumed the second grave, and everything seemed to be untouched.
And the first one?
Empty.
Excuse me?
Not for common knowledge, but... it was empty. No casket, nothing but dirt.
Do you think Diggory took it on one of his earlier digs?
Diggory doesn't usually do that. He robs everything on the scene and covers his tracks.
Maybe the zombies got rid of the casket so it was easier to escape through their portal.
That would be one theory.
Do you have any others?
No.
He made himself a second sandwich.
How was your night? Did you catch Johnny?
Lula had a run-in with a zombie in Judy Chuchi's backyard. The zombie got away, but Lula was convinced she was contaminated with zombie cooties, and she stripped down to her thong.
Whoa, that had to be frightening.
The zombie?
Yeah, that too.
I didn't see the zombie.
How did Lula know it was a zombie?
It sounded like they were up close and personal. She said it breathed on her.
Okay, that's close. Did she get any pieces of zombie rag? Was there an exchange of zombie fluid?
It wasn't that personal. Morelli got a beer out of the fridge.
Worth asking.
What about my zombie rag?
I haven't got the report back yet. Not sure what they got off the car, other than a look at state-of-the-art tracking technology and a legal Glock that refused to hold a fingerprint. Unfortunately, it's a Friday, so I might not know anything until Monday.
Are you working tomorrow?
I'm on call. Are you working?
The office is open for a half day. I need to check on Ethel. And Connie is doing some research for me. Chapter 18 Lula and Connie were already at the office when I walked in. Connie was dressed down in jeans and sneakers and a red sweater. Lula was wearing chunky gladiator sandals, a short black metallic skirt, and a silver tank top. If I didn't know her, I might have been frightened.
She looked like a Who's Your Mama dominatrix.
I have your photos, Connie said. Roger and Miriam Murph.
Lula came over to see the photos.
Who are we looking at?
Grandma's boyfriend and his wife, I said.
Say what?
The only thing Roger Murph had in common with George Hamilton was a tan. Murph was short, mostly bald, and overweight. His wife was equally tan, equally overweight, and excessively wrinkled. Their photos came from the DMV and from an article about a senior center swingers club.
They need a good dermatologist, Lula said.
I took the photos from Connie and stuffed them into my messenger bag. I'll run these over to Grandma, and then I'm going to check on Ethel. Lula looked out the office front window.
You got the zombie car back. I don't know if it's a good idea for you to go down Diggory's Road with that car. There could be zombies lurking that remember you drove over one of them.
We could take your car.
No way. Even if we didn't hit any zombies, it would get all dusty.
I tried not to roll my eyes, but I was only partially successful. Okay, I'll drive. Are you coming?
Hell yeah. Somebody's got to be there to shoot the zombies.
I left Lula in the car, and I ran to my parents' house. Grandma was in the foyer holding her purse. Are you going somewhere? I asked.
I got a date.
You aren't going to Florida, are you?
No, that's old business, Grandma said. I'm moving on. I don't know if I want to keep up with a man who looks like George Hamilton. You got to put a lot of work into looking that good. Besides, I got a new honey. This tan and hairdo got me a date with Willie Cooper. He used to be a butcher at Giovicini's. We're going to the shore to play Skillo.
Wow, that's great.
I'm pretty stoked, Grandma said. He could be the one. I've had my eye on him ever since his wife passed. For an older man, he's got a real nice bum.
I told Grandma to have fun, and I hurried back to Lula.
Did you break the news to her?
Lula asked. Wasn't necessary. She has a date with Willie Cooper. They're going to the shore to play Skillo.
I don't know who that is, but playing Skillo is an excellent date idea.
I drove out of the burg and took Broad Street to Diggory's neighborhood. Halfway to his double wide, I almost ran over a groundhog. It was sneakers up in the middle of the single-lane road. I stopped, and Lula and I peered over the hood at the brown blob.
Looks like a big old groundhog, Lula said.
Yeah, a big old dead groundhog. I can't drive around it, but I think I'll clear if I drive over it.
Yeah, but what if it isn't dead and you don't clear it? Then you got more blood on your hands. First you mow down a zombie, and now you risk smooshing a groundhog. Maybe this groundhog's just taking a nap.
I blew my horn at the groundhog. Nothing.
He could be deaf, Lula said.
I think you should get out of the car and poke it with a stick and take a real close look at it, I said.
I'll get out if you'll get out.
Great. Fine. I'll get out. Yeesh. I wrenched the door open, lurched out, and went to stand over the slightly bloated groundhog. Lula came up beside me.
Looks dead to me, I said.
We should say some words, Lula said. It's only right that when you come on the deceased, you say some words.
You're going to pray over the groundhog?
He's God's creature.
Okay, I get that. We bowed our heads.
Dear Lord, Lula said, bless this disgusting, swelled-up groundhog and take him into the kingdom of heaven or wherever it is that dead groundhogs are supposed to go. Amen.
We both made the sign of the cross.
I would have said more, but I didn't really know the deceased,
Lula said. I gave up a sigh. You said enough. Let's go.
Wait a minute, Lula said. You can't leave him here. He could deface Ranger's car when you drive over him. He could explode and spray guts all over. And anyways, it would be a waste. You should pick it up. You could feed it to Ethel.
Are you crazy? I'm not picking it up.
Did you bring something else for Ethel to eat?
No.
Well, then you should bring her this groundhog. Otherwise, you got to go to the store and get Ethel some more rotisserie chicken.
I hated to admit it, but feeding the groundhog to Ethel wasn't an entirely bad idea. I was running out of rotisserie chicken money. All Rangeman cars are equipped with emergency medical kits. I found disposable gloves for Lula and me and a Mylar survival blanket we could use to protect the back of the Lexus. Lula and I pulled on gloves and returned to the groundhog. I spread the blanket out on the road and looked at Lula. I'll take the front legs and you take the rear legs and we'll put them on the blanket. Then we can carry him to the car.
Ethel better appreciate this, Lula said. I wouldn't do this for just any snake.
We grabbed the groundhog by his legs and dropped him onto the blanket.
I think he's leaking something, Lula said. It looks like gravy.
I gave a shudder and dragged the blanket to the SUV. We trundle the groundhog in, wrap the blanket around him so no gravy would get on Ranger's car, and I close the hatch. I drove about 10 feet, and I got a call from Judy Chuchi.
"He's here," she said. "The idiot is standing on my sidewalk holding a sign that says he loves me."
"I'm on my way," I told her. "Try to keep him there." I made a U-turn and sped out of Diggory's neighborhood.
"What about Ethel?" Lula asked. "She's going to be wondering about breakfast."
"She has to wait. If I catch Johnny Chuchi and bring him in, I can afford rotisserie chicken." I cut across the burg and reached Judy Street in record time. Her house was a block away, and I could see Johnny standing on the sidewalk with his sign.
"You got to give him something for being persistent," Lula said. "Of course, aside from that, he's a nutcase."
"I'm going to park and approach him. If he runs, I'll go after him. You stay here and make sure he doesn't circle back and drive away. The silver Honda is parked across the street from Judy's house."
"No problem," Lula said. "I'll make sure he don't get near the car."
I pulled in behind the Honda, and Lula and I got out. Johnny didn't turn to look. He was waving his sign and watching for Judy to appear at the door. I guess he thought if he stayed there long enough, she'd give in and come out. I was halfway across the street when he saw me. Recognition was instant. He dropped the sign and took off. I chased him between the two houses and through several backyards. He was surprisingly fast, hurtling over fences and crashing through hedges. I caught my toe on one of the fences and face-planted. I got up and continued to chase him, but I was far behind. He turned a corner, and by the time I got there, he'd disappeared. I stood still and listened. I didn't hear footsteps, but someone was breathing heavily not far away. At least I had the satisfaction of knowing he wasn't in any better shape than me. "Hey, Johnny," I yelled. "Let's talk. I can help you." I was at the corner, standing to one side of a shingled bungalow with a small front yard that had been cemented over and painted green. Johnny poked his head out from the other side.
"Go away. I'm not going to jail," he said.
"It could work out okay. Maybe the judge will be sympathetic and you'll get off with community service."
"No way. I'll serve time, and when I get out, Judy will be married. I'll never get her back."
"I don't think she's interested in you. I think you should move on."
"I can't," Johnny said. "I love her."
"Why?"
"I don't know. She's a stupid obsession. I can't stop thinking about her."
"Maybe you need a hobby. Prison might be a good thing. You could take up metalwork or pumping iron." I moved toward him, and he jumped away from the house.
"No," he said. "Stay away from me. I have a gun."
"I don't see a gun.
It's in my pocket."
"I want to see it." Johnny struggled to get the gun out of his pocket, and bang! He accidentally shot himself in the foot. He stared open-mouthed at his foot for a couple beats and fainted. I called 911, and I called Lula. I elevated Johnny's feet and was relieved when he opened his eyes.
"What?" he asked. "When?"
It took him a few minutes to fully come around and realize his foot hurt. I didn't bother with cuffs, because he wasn't going to be running anywhere anytime soon. The gun was lying a safe distance away. Lula drove up in Ranger's Lexus and parked. I could hear a fire truck a couple blocks away.
"What the heck?" Lula said, looking down at Johnny. "What did the dumbass do now?"
"Shot himself in the foot," I said.
"Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of," Lula said. "We've all been there."
Johnny was in a white-faced cold sweat.
"Am I gonna die?" he asked.
"Eventually, but not today," I told him. "You shot yourself in the foot. That's not usually fatal." 10 minutes later, the street was filled with first, second, and third responders. Johnny was strapped onto an EMT stretcher and rolled into the ambulance for the 3-minute drive to St. Francis Medical Center. I rode with Johnny, and Lula took my car back to the office. Johnny was admitted through the ER and whisked away to prep for surgery, such as it was. If there were a lot of bones involved, they might take him upstairs. Otherwise, the bullet would be removed down here, he'd get a shot of antibiotic, his foot would get bundled, and he'd get turned over to me. You wouldn't want to have brain surgery done at St. Francis, but you were in good hands with a gunshot. Emergency had lots of experience removing bullets. It was actually a good time of day to get shot. Not a lot was going on in emergency, so the wait time for attention wasn't bad. If he'd gotten shot at 11 at night, he'd have to take a ticket and get in line. After a half hour, I went back to check on Johnny. He was on an ER bed in one of the little draped cubicles. His shoe had been removed, and his pants leg cut off at the knee. His foot was elevated and packed in ice. "What's going on?" I asked him.
"I'm waiting for X-rays."
An ER doctor showed up and looked at the foot.
"Doesn't look terrible,"
he said. "How long before he's discharged?" I asked.
"Are you his wife?"
"I'm a bail bonds apprehension agent, and he's a fugitive. When you're done with him, he'll either be transferred upstairs to the lockup, or I'll take him downtown to the police station."
"I doubt he'll need to be hospitalized. His vitals are all okay, and I should be able to do this procedure under local anesthesia. With luck, he'll be out of here in a couple hours."
I returned to the waiting room and read all the magazines. I read my email. I spent time on Facebook. I got candy out of the vending machine and told myself it was lunch. It was almost 1 o'clock when Johnny got rolled out of the back in a wheelchair. He was holding crutches and his discharge papers. He had a massive bandage around his foot, and he looked exhausted. There was no way I could turn him into the police. He looked pathetic. "Is there some place you can go for the night?" I asked him. "Your parents' house? One of your brothers?"
"I thought I was going to jail."
"I can't take you in like this. They'll take your pain pills away, and you can't walk. I'll give you a couple nights to recover, but you have to promise not to leave the burg."
"I promise. I guess I could stay with my parents."
"Great." I called Lula and told her I needed a ride. 5 minutes later, she drove her red Firebird into the pickup area just outside the ER. I helped Johnny into the back seat, handed him his crutches, and turned the wheelchair over to an aide.
"Are we going to the police station?"
Lula asked. "No," I said. "I'm going to let him stay with his parents for a couple nights." Lula looked back at Johnny.
"That's probably not smart, but it's nice. He looks done in."
She drove to the elder Chuchi's house. I helped Johnny to the door, and his mom took him in. She didn't look happy. Couldn't blame her.
"Where are we going now?"
Lula asked. "I should be looking for Slick, but I don't know where to begin."
"I got a theory," Lula said. "They haven't found any of his parts, right?"
"Right."
"I think that's because they turned him into a zombie, and he's hanging with the rest of them. You find the zombie pack, and you'll find Slick."
"That's a disturbing thought."
"You bet your ass. And it's a problem on account of zombies don't like a lot of light, so they skulk around in the shadows during the day. They could be holed up inside somewhere with their shades pulled down, and they could be watching MTV.
"Or they could have found a nice dark building where Slick would be able to cook more meth."
"Exactly. Imagine a zombie on meth. That's epic crazy."
"I wasn't serious," I said.
"I get it. That was sarcasm. In my opinion, that's not a healthy form of expression. It's filled with negativity. And anyways, I was serious. Something got Slick, and it makes sense it was a zombies."
"Assuming it was zombies, where would we find them?"
"Ordinarily, I think to look in the cemetery, but they might have temporarily vacated it with all the cops roaming around."
"Any other ideas?"
"Diggory's Woods. It's a perfect place for a bunch of zombies, and already we know they go there sometimes."
"Okay. Do you want to go zombie hunting with me in Diggory's Woods?"
"No. No way, no how. I don't think so. Not gonna happen. Also, I usually only work half a day on Saturday, and I'm past the halfway mark. I got an appointment to get my nails done this afternoon."
"No problem. Drop me at my car, and I'll see if I can talk Morelli into going with me."
"How about if I drop you at Morelli's house and you'll be one step ahead of the game?"
"That won't work. I need my car so I can feed Ethel."
"About your car," Lula said. "You know how it's such a nice sunny day?"
"Yeah."
"And you know how exceptionally warm it's got?"
"Yeah."
"And you know how a locked-up car can get overly hot inside when it's parked in the sun? Well, your car got parked in the sun, and the groundhog exploded."
"What?"
"Exploded. At least that's what we think happened. Hard to tell from what's left. Look to Connie and me that you don't leave a dead groundhog in a hot car. Who would have thought?"
"Is it bad?"
"It isn't good,"
Lula said.
"There's putrefied groundhog guts and gravy all over the place. I wouldn't want to be the one to detail it."
Lula eased to the curb behind my car, staying a good distance away.
"I need to park back here so I don't contaminate my baby with groundhog stink," she said.
"There are turkey vultures sitting on it."
"Yeah, we keep shooing them, but they keep coming back and pecking at the roof. I imagine you might have a few dents up there."
We got out of the Firebird and stood looking at the vultures.
You want me to shoot them? Lula asked.
No. I crept closer and looked inside.
Oh, my God,
I said, clapping a hand over my mouth, holding my breath.
It's like you exploded that sucker in a microwave, right? It's like when you forget to put the top on the blender. It's like projectile vomit from something possessed.
I bit into my lower lip to keep from whimpering. Do you think it's totaled?
Not in the traditional sense of being flattened by a garbage truck or being run off a bridge into the Delaware, but in the sense that no one is going to want to drive it? Hell yeah.
I closed my eyes and tried to calm myself. I destroyed yet another of Ranger's cars, and there was a bet riding on this, double or nothing. I was in a relationship with Morelli, and I owed Ranger two nights. What was I thinking? I called Ranger, and he answered with the usual,
"Babe."
"Bad news," I said. "It's about your Lexus."
"One of my patrol cars drove by it an hour ago and said it was being circled by vultures."
"There was an unfortunate incident with a dead groundhog."
"I didn't see that one coming," Ranger said. "How bad is it?"
"There are vultures circling. How bad do you think it is?" Silence. "You're laughing again, aren't you?" I asked him.
"Do I need to send someone in a hazmat suit?"
"Yes."
"Do you need another car? I'm running a tab."
"No, I don't need another car. I'm going to get Big Blue."
"Let me know if you change your mind."
Big Blue is a 1953 blue and white Buick Roadmaster in prime condition. My grandmother inherited it, and it now sits in my parents' garage and is available to borrow. It drives like a tank, and while some might think old cars are cool, I feel like an idiot in it. That said, it's free and comes with no strings attached.
"What's the plan?" Lula asked.
"Ranger is going to take care of the Lexus. I'm going to borrow Big Blue."
"I'll give you a ride. Then I'm going to get my nails done. I like my nails to be looking good. I get a chip in my nail varnish and my juju goes in the dumper."
Chapter 19. Grandma opened the door when I stepped onto the front porch.
"We're done with lunch," she said, "but I can fix you a sandwich if you're hungry."
"Thanks, I've already eaten. 3 Reese's peanut butter cups, 2 Snickers bars, and a bag of M&Ms.
"I thought you had a date with Willie Cooper." "It got over early. He got bursitis playing Skillo. He was a dud anyway. All he could talk about was his prostate and how he was getting radiation, and his prostate was going to turn into a useless leather hacky sack. I got an idea his prostate was useless before he got zapped."
"Bummer."
"Yeah. How are you doing with Johnny Chuchi?"
"I captured him, but he shot himself in the foot, so I left him with his mother."
"Was he wearing his underpants on his head?"
"No."
"Too bad. I bet that would be something to see."
"I'm going to borrow Big Blue for a couple days."
"Help yourself. The keys are in the car."
I backed the Buick out of the garage and drove the short distance to Morelli's house. I let myself in and found Morelli in front of the television with a bag of chips and a beer. Bob was on the couch next to him.
"This game sucks," he said when he saw me. "Both teams suck."
I sat down at the far end of the couch and helped myself to some chips. I gave a couple to Bob and ate the rest. "I need to feed Ethel," I said. "Want to ride shotgun?"
"Yeah, I live to feed Ethel."
"As a special bonus, you could look in the woods for zombies."
"Sorry, it's my day off from zombies."
I went to the kitchen and looked in his fridge. Half a leftover pepperoni pizza, 2 boxes of frozen waffles in the freezer, a loaf of bread on the counter. I gathered them all up and put them in a grocery bag. Morelli followed me.
"What's with the food in the bag?"
"It's for Ethel. I'm out of rotisserie chicken money. I had some really great roadkill for her, but it exploded."
"I'm not even going to ask."
"I appreciate that because I don't want to talk about it." We took Morelli's car and drove down Diggory's Road in silence, scanning the cleared areas and surrounding woods. We wouldn't admit to believing in zombies, but it was hard to dispute the presence of zombie-like things. Morelli parked close to the double-wide, and I carefully entered and looked around. Ethel was coiled in the bedroom doorway. "Hey," I yelled, "lunch." I dumped the food on the dining table and returned to Morelli.
"How was it in there?"
he asked as I climbed into the front seat. "Nothing new. How was it out here?"
"Lonely. Would you like to get naked?"
"Here?"
Yeah, it's been a long time since we did it in a car.
We never did it in a car.
Are you sure?
Yes. You must be thinking of the hundreds, maybe thousands of women you did in a car.
We almost did it in a car.
Yes, almost. He leaned across the gear shift and kissed me. His hand slid under my T-shirt and found my breast. His touch was warm and gentle. The first kiss was soft. The second kiss was pure passion. He unsnapped my bra, and his phone rang. We both froze. The phone kept ringing. Morelli yanked the phone out of his pocket and threw it out the window. The ringing stopped for a moment, and then resumed. "Probably you should answer it," I said. "It sounds official." Morelli got out of the car and retrieved his phone. He had a short conversation and got back into the car. "Well?" I asked.
"That was dispatch. Some woman claimed she was chased out of her house by a zombie."
"Is this for real? Are you sure you aren't being punked?" Morelli shrugged and rolled the engine over.
"I'll know when I get there. She's on Surrey Street. That's two blocks from the Morley Street Cemetery, the epicenter of zombie activity."
I feel like I'm in a Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah, this is a 10 on the weirdometer. I find myself feeling nostalgic for the good old days when I was sticking to blood-soaked floors, investigating gang killings.
After you talk to her, are you going to come home?
Yep.
And then?
And then, I'm going to make you happy, Morelli said.
You're going to give me a back rub?
I'm going to rub every square inch of you.
Oh, boy. Morelli left me at his house and drove away. I didn't expect him to return anytime soon. He'd interview the woman and then get stuck at the station doing paperwork. I went to the kitchen and got a soda out of the fridge. I turned and bumped into Diesel. "Geez, Louise," I said. "What the heck?" "How's it going?" Diesel asked. When I found my voice, it was an octave higher than normal. "What are you doing here?"
"Thought I'd stop in to say hello."
"You can't just pop into Morelli's house."
"Sure I can. It's easy. His locks are crap."
Diesel looked in the fridge.
"There's nothing to eat in here."
I gave the leftovers to Ethel.
"The snake? How's she doing?"
"She's doing okay." Diesel looked in the cupboard and found a bag of pretzels. He helped himself to a beer and ate the pretzels.
"I like the pool table in the dining room," he said. "Nice touch."
"Where have you been?"
"Working. Looking for a guy."
"All day and night?"
"Whatever it takes," Diesel said, offering the pretzels to me.
I took a handful and got myself a beer. "Were you looking for him in the Morley Street Cemetery?"
"Yeah, no luck."
"Don't suppose you want to tell me about it?"
"Not much to tell," Diesel said. "He's sort of a new age zombie."
"For real?" Diesel shrugged.
"As real as a zombie could get."
"The police have a video of you in the cemetery. It was taken by one of my FTAs, Zero Slick."
"Little guy, brown ponytail?"
"Yes, he's disappeared."
"How'd they get the video if he disappeared?"
"He left his GoPro behind. Don't suppose you know where I can find him?"
"No, maybe he's hanging with the zombies."
"Do you believe in zombies?"
"Honey pie, I believe in almost everything. Simplifies a lot of shit."
"You were there when the zombies attacked Slick," I said. "Why didn't you stop them?"
"They didn't attack him when I was there. I was tracking my target and I passed a couple locals, but I didn't see any zombies."
"Their eyes were glowing in the video."
"Almost all eyes glow in infrared. There was probably a time lapse between frames that you didn't notice."
I grabbed another handful of pretzels. "It was possible. Maybe." "I thought you were supposed to be this super tracker," I said. "Why can't you find your guy?"
"He has his own skill set."
"Could you find Slick?"
"Slick isn't my problem."
"Yes, but he's my problem, and I could use some help." Diesel grinned.
"Maybe we could make a deal."
Oh my God, another deal. Isn't it enough I have to sleep with Ranger? Okay, let's get real. I want to sleep with both these men. I mean, who wouldn't? Damnation, I was going straight to hell. "What did you have in mind?" I asked.
"If I find him for you, I get to see you naked."
"That's it?"
"Should I have asked for more?"
"No."
"I figure once you're naked, who knows?"
I squinched my eyes closed and smacked myself on the forehead. Ugh.
Is that a yes?
No. It would feel icky to get naked and have you look at me.
Okay, so how about strip poker?
No way. I've seen you play poker.
You pick a game.
Old maid.
Works for me. Let's go.
Now?
Do you have something better to do?
I followed him to the door. Do you have a car? Do you know where to look?
Yes and no. Here's the way it works. You tell me where you want to look. We go there and walk around, and if he's there, I'll probably know.
I could do that.
Yeah, but I can do it better. Where do you want to look?
His parents' house, the cemetery, the woods around Diggory's double wide. We stepped outside. I locked the door and looked at the car parked behind Big Blue. It was a red Ferrari. That's your car? I asked.
It was available. I take what they give me.
They?
My handlers.
I stared at him. Who are you?
Diesel, he said. Just Diesel.
And that's another thing. Don't you have a last name?
It's Diesel, so you see the problem.
You're Diesel Diesel?
My parents had a sense of humor not shared by the rest of the family. On the bright side, I have a cousin named Gerowulf Grimoire, so I suppose I should be happy.
He put his hand on the small of my back and moved me forward. I slid into the Ferrari and buckled up.
Where would you like to go first? He asked, settling behind the wheel.
Slick's parents were a long shot, and Morelli was most likely still in the vicinity of Morley Street, so I went with Diggory's Woods. Diesel drove down the single-lane road without looking side to side. He said it distracted from his radar. If anyone else said this, I'd roll my eyes, but this was Diesel, and what the heck, maybe he really had radar. We parked in Diggory's yard at the end of the road and got out of the car. We stood very still and listened.
Well, I asked Diesel. It's quiet here. It's like it's not even Trenton. Wouldn't be half bad if it had some palm trees and a beach.
There are a bunch of abandoned shelters tucked away in the woods. Cars, storage sheds, houses, tents. We could do a search of the area and see if any of these places are being used by, you-know-whats.
Zombies?
Yes. I wouldn't search the woods on my own. I'm not that brave, and I know my limitations. Even with Diesel, I wasn't entirely comfortable snooping around. I'd been chased by dogs, and my car had been attacked by a zombie in Diggory's Woods. And, to make matters worse, I was operating without a pack of wieners.
The road isn't that long, Diesel said. A couple miles. We can walk down it and check out possible zombie dens.
What will we do if we find zombies?
We'll ask them if they've seen Slick.
Chapter 20. It took us an hour to reach the end of Diggory's Road. Most of the houses had people living in them. The people didn't look all that great, but none of them looked like zombies. The dilapidated tents and yurts and sheds were also zombie-free. We were almost back to Diggory's double wide, and I realized we were at the bend in the road where I ran into the zombie. There were no houses here. It was heavily wooded on both sides, but now that I was on foot, I could see a path threading between the trees. I suppose we should see where that leads, I said to Diesel. This is where I bounced the zombie off my right front quarter panel. Diesel looked at me and grinned.
You ran over a zombie?
I didn't exactly run over him. He was in the middle of the road, and I kind of punted him to one side. By the time I got out of the car, he was gone.
Honey, it's not good to piss off a zombie.
That's what Lula said. Diesel hugged me to him and kissed me on the top of the head.
This is getting to be fun.
Diesel followed the trail, and I followed Diesel. After a short walk, we came to a hole that had been dug in the ground. It was about 6 feet deep, and it looked like a tunnel opened off to one side. A ladder was propped against the wall of the hole. Diesel jumped in and looked around. What's down there? I asked.
A tunnel? Mostly dirt shored up with some wood. Smells like dirt and carnations.
Zombies!
Sweetheart, zombies only exist in Hollywood.
I thought you said you believed in everything.
He looked up at me. Rule number one, never believe anything I tell you.
I'm going to see where this tunnel leads. You want to come along?
No. How can you see in there? Do you have a flashlight?
I have good night vision.
Am I supposed to believe that?
Your choice.
He disappeared into the tunnel, and I was left standing on the edge of the hole. I called down to Diesel, but he didn't answer. It was late afternoon, and it was getting dark under the tree canopy. I checked my email and slid my phone back into my pocket. I heard rustling behind me, turned, and came face to face with a zombie woman. Two men were behind her.
"I'd like your brain," she whispered to me.
Her face was smeared with dirt, and her hair was Fright Night. Her voice was 6 packs of Camels a Day raspy. I stumbled back and almost fell into the hole. I yelled for Diesel, and then I took off. The zombies were in the path, so I ran through the woods in blind panic. I tripped and scraped my knee and my hands. I got up, listened for footsteps, and heard that they weren't far behind. I ran toward a patch of light and came out at Diggory's double wide. I tried to get into the car, but it was locked. Diesel had the key. I ran for Diggory's front door, put my shoulder to it, and popped it open. I slammed the door shut and slid the bolt. I was gasping for air, bent at the waist, and I saw Ethel looking at me. She was curled on the dining table.
"It's you and me against the zombies," I said to Ethel. "I'm counting on you."
There was banging on the door and some doorknob rattling. A moment of silence, and then a rag-wrapped fist smashed through the window over the table. It broke the glass away, and a grotesque face looked in at me. Ethel raised her head and hissed at the face, and the face fell away. God bless Ethel. I was going to bring her a leg of lamb tomorrow, a porterhouse steak, a ham. I rummaged through Diggory's kitchen drawers and found a chef's knife. I went to his bedroom and searched for a gun. I found one under the bed. It was a long-barrel revolver, and it was loaded. Grandma had a similar gun. I went back to Ethel and was about to dial Ranger when Diesel called.
"I'm outside," he said. "Open the door."
"I thought you had this mysterious ability to open doors."
"I didn't want to startle the snake."
"You don't like snakes?"
"Not my favorite."
I opened the door and looked past Diesel to the woods, checking for red eyes.
"What's with the gun and the knife?" he asked. "Are you planning to shoot the snake?"
"I was chased through the woods by 3 zombies. I couldn't get into the car, so I locked myself in here and borrowed Diggory's gun."
His eyes focused on the broken window.
"Has that window always been broken?"
"No. One of the zombies put his fist through it. Ethel hissed at him, and he went away."
"And you think they were zombies?"
"For lack of a better word."
"Notice anything significant about the window?"
My breathing was almost back to normal, and my voice had stopped shaking. I looked over at the broken window. "Blood," I said. "The zombie got cut when he smashed the glass. Unusual for a zombie to bleed."
"Unheard of," Diesel said.
I put the gun and the knife back where I found them. We left the double wide and got into the car.
"What did you find in the tunnel?" I asked Diesel.
"It was more cave than tunnel. It looked like it originally might have been a root cellar. There was a burned-down cabin not far away. The cabin isn't habitable, but someone's recently used the cave."
"The zombies?"
"Yeah, the zombies. They've been doing new digging. There was a decomposed head partially covered with dirt, and I think I saw what might be foot bones. I didn't do a lot of exploring. Didn't want to disturb the crime scene. You should call it into Morelli and tell him to have CSI check out the bloody window glass."
I dialed Morelli, and he answered on the first ring. "I went back to Diggory's," I said. "I did some exploring and found a hole in the ground that looks like it leads somewhere. You need to check it out. I was standing over it, and 3 zombies appeared out of nowhere and chased me back to Diggory's double wide. One of the zombies smashed a window trying to get at me, but Ethel scared him away."
"Where are you now? Are you okay?"
"I'm fine, just a little freaked. I'm heading back to your house. Where are you?"
"I'm at the station doing paperwork."
"You want to take CSI with you to Diggory's? The zombie cut himself when he smashed the window, and he left a blood smear."
"Zombies don't bleed,"
Morelli said. "Exactly. About 1/4 mile before you get to the double wide, there's a bend in the road. If you look right, you'll see a path going into the woods. Follow the path to the zombie den."
"I'm on it."
"How did it go with the woman who got chased out of her house?"
She was in her kitchen, and a zombie walked in and told her he wanted her brain. She said he was filthy and his eyes were red, but he was surprisingly short for a zombie. She said he had a brown ponytail and looked confused.
Do you think it could have been Slick?
I guess it's possible. Ziggy was first on the scene, and he said there was no sign of